Hello, and thanks for joining us for today's TMCH and IDN's webinar. I'm Nicole Davenport, new GTLD Communications Manager. Thank you for bearing with us this morning. We had quite a lot of interest in participating in the webinar, so we are glad to be moving forward and beginning. Before we begin our discussion, I'd like to cover a few things. This webinar is being recorded. Recordings and supporting materials will be published on the new GTLD microsite. The running time of the webinar is 90 minutes. We'll start with a presentation and end with a question and answer session. You can ask a question via phone or in the Adobe Connect questions and comments pod. Phone questions will be given priority, and questions submitted online will be answered if time permits. Dial-in numbers can be found on the webinar's page of the microsite at http://newgtlds.icann.org/webinars. The conference ID is Trademark Clearinghouse Webinar. To enter the phone queue, dial *1. To exit the queue, dial *2. Please make sure that your phone is not on speaker when you ask a question. Now I'd like to turn it over to Cyrus Namazi to give you a little bit more information about the webinar.
Thank you, Nicole. Hello, everyone. This is Cyrus Namazi from ICANN. Thank you so much for joining us in this webinar today. We apologize for the delay in getting us kicked off. We actually had more interest than we anticipated, and we wanted to add more lines so that everyone could dial in as well as be connected into the Adobe room. The Trademark Clearinghouse is without a doubt one of the most important components of the new GTLD program. And as such, we have actually brought together today all the key staff members from ICANN, as well as actually Vicky Fallon from Deloitte, to be able to provide you with an overview of the program, the processes that we have in place, as well as the process for providing customer support through ICANN, as well as Deloitte. We also have a few slides that we'd like to share with you on the status of the IDN program at ICANN, and this will be followed up by a full webinar, which is scheduled for next week, that will be focused on and dedicated to the IDN topic. So I hope that today we'll be able to provide information to you that you will find useful, and more importantly, that you'll give us feedback so that we can continue to improve on the services that we provide and the customer support processes that we have put in place through ICANN, as well as Deloitte. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Antonetta Mangiacati, one of our key staff members on the Trademark Clearinghouse, to kick this off for us. Thank you very much. Antonetta.
Hi, everyone. I'm Antonetta Mangiacati. Now I will quickly go over the main agenda. I will begin by briefly introducing the Trademark Clearinghouse functions, and then the rest of the team will go more in-depth on the trademark verification process with focus on IDNs, sunrise and claims processes, the status of IDN projects at ICANN, and we will end with a Q&A session. The Trademark Clearinghouse is a rights protection mechanism built into ICANN's new GTLD program, which functions by verifying trademark data from multiple global regions. It maintains a database with the verified trademark records and provides this information to registries and registrars during the domain name registration process. Now, I will turn it over to Vicky Fallon from Deloitte, who will review the trademark verification process with focus on IDNs.
Thank you, Antonetta. I hope you all hear me. Okay. Well, so move to the next slide. We have a couple of agenda points. So next slide. So we'll be talking today about the IDNs and are they accepted on the Trademark Clearinghouse, and give you some examples as to what is going, some examples of the trademarks in the various languages. The trademarks versus you have simplified Chinese and you have traditional Chinese, how we deal with those trademarks in particular, some updates on the online databases, give you some overview of the verification process, and also give you some other topics that you need to know in relation to verification process in general. Next slide. So people have asked us, does the clearinghouse accept trademarks and non-ASCII characters or any other foreign languages that are available? And the answer is yes. We do accept all trademarks from all different countries and all different languages. The following slides, we're going to provide you with some examples of trademarks. So slide. It's important to note that these examples are just for illustrative purposes. We have done some research on the databases and so on to provide some different examples of the different trademarks and different scripts. And also, I want to discuss with everybody some misinterpretation or misunderstanding about the fact that mixed scripts are not allowed in the trademark clearinghouse, and what does that actually mean. So here there's an example on this slide about the European, if you can move the slide back, sorry. Right, yeah. So this is an example of the European trademark registration for the trademark Feinborn China. Now, if you look in the red square, you'll see that Feinborn China has been provided also with some Chinese characters. And here, so this is an example of the trademark Feinborn China in English characters, or in English language, sorry, and in Chinese characters. But here you can clearly see when you look at the trademark name that the European online database has classified this as the trademark being Feinborn China. Meaning in this case you can actually have protection in the trademark clearinghouse for the trademark Feinborn China. Slide. Here's another example of, if you see above the trademark, you have the label there. It's actually a label of Russian standard vodka that they use. If you look at the label, you can actually see that there's a mixed script. Again, here it's provided in Russian and in English. But if you look at the description that the trademark office provided, you can clearly see that the description in the red box is both in Russian script and in English language. So in this case, this is a trademark that contains a mixed script. On one side, we have Cyrillic script, and on the other side, we have ASCII script. So here, the labels cannot be generated in accordance to the IDN rules. So this is what we mean when we say the labels as such consisting out of mixed script cannot be generated. So you can actually submit this trademark into the clearinghouse because you do indeed have a trademark for the whole word mark as provided in the description of goods and services. However, you will not be able to create any labels. So that's why we say do not put this in the trademark clearinghouse because you will not get any protection because you will not receive any notifications on those different labels. Next slide, please. And here is an example of a Russian trademark where you see that all the information is indeed provided in Russian. So this is an example of a strict forward case that can be submitted to the trademark clearinghouse and will provide protection for that mark in the Cyrillic script, and the labels will be generated in according to that name of the mark as well. Slides. Now, we've had a lot of questions about some trademarks provide their information in simplified and traditional Chinese, and how do we deal with that? We understand that both are protected in accordance to some of the trademark offices. And this is an example of one that is protected. So you see here the name of the mark. If you look in the red box, this is a the name of the mark is provided in traditional Chinese and simplified Chinese. Now the question, as most of you have, is can we protect both of those? Yes, you can. But how you can protect it is another story, because here we provide protection by submitting two different trademarks and verifying it. So that's important if you want to enter simplified and traditional Chinese trademarks, that it is possible, but it will be submitted in two records. And a lot of people have asked us, but why is this? Because it's on the trademark records, and we should be able to provide in one record the same in one record protection for both of these marks. Well, we have the same issue with in the UK. You have also a series of marks where there are also variants provided on that mark. So there the rule is also the same as if it's protected on your trademark and it's qualified as a mark, you need to submit the different marks per trademark record. So we have the clear guideline as it's one trademark per trademark record. And also, if you look at trademarks with café accent, they cannot get any protection with café without the accent. So that is why we are very, that's how we have implemented it at this time, to make it sure that it's fair and it's the same protection across the global. Next slide. Here's another example that we wanted to provide you with. This is, again, a mark in Chinese script. And you also said they provide a transliteration of the mark. If you look under the classification 561, you will see that the transliteration Ren Tu Ma is provided. It's important to note the protection is provided for the name of the mark and not the transliteration. So there's not a possibility to get protection at the time for the transliteration of the mark. We'll have to provide you with those different examples. Now, showing those examples, we'll move on to the next slide. And here, so we've showed you some examples as to what is accepted in the trademark clearinghouse. We also wanted to let you or provide you some more information in which language you want to submit or you need to submit your information to the clearinghouse and some updates on the online databases. On our website, we have provided a list with all the online databases that are available. This list has currently changed from the beginning when we started because we've had some issues with some online databases that there's no access or the access is really goes off and on. So we have taken some countries or jurisdictions out of the list. That doesn't mean that you cannot submit your trademark based on those countries. You can submit those trademarks, but you just need to provide us with a copy of the trademark certificate so that we can verify that information. As for how or in which language the information should be submitted, it's important to note that it should be submitted in the language of provided on the trademark certificate. Of course, the trademark name, that's logical that it needs to be provided in the language or script as provided in the trademark certificate. But also the name and address of the holder, if it's provided in another language than English, you can provide this information in that language. As for example, if it's provided in Japanese, we verify it in Japanese. That's why we have our global outreach as Deloitte has put in place as well, so we have no issues with that. On the other hand, if you say, well, we want to provide it in English because we think it's easier to use the SMD file or receive notifications or any information like that, that is fine as well, but then you need to provide us with a certified copy of, a certified translation of the trademark certificate and the information on there. For detailed description of goods and services as well, this should be provided in the language of on the certificate. So if you have a Spanish certificate, then we ask you to provide the description of goods and services in Spanish. But again, if you still prefer to provide it in English, that is fine as long as we get a certified translation of the trademark copy. The trademark certificate, sorry. And on the next slide, we will actually, here's an example of, here's the description of goods and services. As you can clearly see, all the information is provided in Japanese. The organization is also provided in Japanese. You can also provide the name of the organization in both Japanese and English. So if that that will be reported in the SMD file as well. And you see here the street is provided in Japanese as well, and the city as well. So it's clear that it can be used, it can be submitted in any language through the interface that you prefer to have your trademark submitted in. Next slide. Now that you know how to submit to the Trademark Clearinghouse, what we accept currently in the Trademark Clearinghouse, we also want to let you know how the verification process has actually been put in place. So we deal with a 4i review process, meaning there are two verifications per trademark record. So we have Validation Group 1 and Validation Group 2. Each of them look at the trademark records. And if there's an inconsistency between those two verifications, it actually goes to another group to look at the inconsistency and to take to see what the inconsistency is and how to deal with that. We verify for the accuracy and completeness of the information and also if they meet the eligibility requirements. And just again to highlight what information we verify. So in first instance, we check to see that the trademark is indeed registered in that part by going to the online database or checking the trademark certificate and also sampling that on the local offices. We check to see that the name of the trademark exactly matches what is on the trademark certificate in that language as on the trademark certificate. Again, I want to highlight the fact that no dots, so trademarks with a dot or a point or a punctuation are not accepted in the Trademark Clearinghouse. It's also important to note if trademark with a space in there, trademark that includes a space, then you need to also include the space on your or as reported in the name of the trademark. The registration date, the NIS classification number, so this corresponds with the description of goods and services in our interface. We also check the detailed description of goods and services to make sure that this is also complete as provided on the trademark certificate. And again, we always ask to provide that in the language or provide us with the certified translation. The type of the holder, so if you're the owner, the licensee, or assignee, in some cases all of these are mentioned on the trademark certificate, but in most cases it's either the owner that is mentioned on the trademark certificate, and if you're not the owner but acting on a licensee, then you need to select the type licensee and provide us with the templates as provided on the website qualifying under licensee declaration. Check to see that the name of the holder is correct and accurate. The address of the holder, we are some lenient on the street and postal code, but the city and country does always have to match. For Sunrise eligibility purposes, so record includes also if you want to be Sunrise eligible, your record needs to include the proof of use. The proof of use consists out of two elements. A signed declaration, where you can find the declaration on the Trademark Clearinghouse website, and where you need to complete the name of the submitting party. The name of the submitting party should correspond with the name that you provide to the clearinghouse. So if you are the trademark holder and you stated that in the clearinghouse, the name of the submitting party needs to be completed on the signed declaration. And, of course, the proof of use sample, this also needs to be provided. Only one sample needs to be provided, even if your trademark is registered in different different classes, sorry. Only one sample needs to be provided. But, of course, a trademark, for example, then it's logical that your sample of use needs to to show how you use that trademark or that Chinese trademark. Next slide. Also, so as we said, we look at all that information that is provided. If for some reason that information is incorrect or incomplete, again, we want to stress out the fact that we do have a correction process in place, and currently this has been used in a lot of time. But we just wanted to also give you some information as to what initiates a recorrection process. So if the name of the mark is incorrect, then we ask you to correct the name of the mark. So even if you provide it with, we say that your name of the mark is with the space and you have reported it with that, we'll ask you to correct that to make sure that it's accurate and correct and it's as reported on the trademark certificate. Also, if the registration number is incorrect, in most cases, if the registration number is incorrect, we cannot find the trademark on the online databases. So then it's important to note that if the registration is incorrect, that there's a lot of items that we cannot check anymore, so we have to recheck the whole certificate. So please be aware of that when you're completing the registration number. Also, the jurisdiction. Jurisdiction. If the jurisdiction is incorrect, then that is also a reason why it's going to be why the trademark record goes back to the because of course we need to ensure that the jurisdiction corresponds with what or in which country your trademark is protected. Also, for the other items, I'm not going to go all over all of them, but it's clear. I mean, if the name or the address or something is incorrect, then you need to correct this. One special item, though, for the name of the holder or address of the holder. So if it's incorrect because the holder, for example, has currently moved but has not reported this to the trademark certificate, we do allow you to provide the new address, but we ask them to provide a documentary evidence of the fact that the company has moved, because we prefer to have accurate information in the database and understand that it sometimes takes a while until the trademark offices get that updated. So that's why we are fine if you can provide us with documentary evidence to ensure to show that it's been registered, that the address has changed, to accept this in the clearinghouse. And if we can, next slide, and my. So some have asked us trademarks in another script. Do you currently have in the trademark clearinghouse? Well, we don't have quite a lot at this current stage. We have about 100 trademark records, whereas we have 18 trademarks in Cyrillic, 7 in Japanese, 49 in Chinese, 13 in Arabic, and 2 in Hebrew. We do believe that this comes due to the fact that we have not done sufficient outreach to these different or that some information has not been provided in those different areas. So we're working on those areas as well to have a more outreach in those areas so that people are aware that the Trademark Clearinghouse does accept IDNs and that we can hopefully protect more through the global presence. And then the last slide that I have, let's move to the next slide. So this is just a general slide that we just also have or want to share with you because we are seeing some as mistakes. So we have the new classification that you need to provide us with the number of that corresponds to your goods and services. We also have the non-applicable available because we are aware of the countries that do not follow the NIS classification. And for your references, we have provided the list of the countries that do not follow the NIS classification. So in those cases, the description of goods and services should be non-applicable and should not mention a number. And then with that, I think I can... Karen, who will now present the next section.
Thank you, Vicki. So Vicki has taken us through the trademark verification process that's used by the clearinghouse for submission and verification of trademark data that's submitted. I'm going to talk a little bit about the Sunrise and claims processes and how those work in relation to second level registrations. So we're now in the process of implementing the Sunrise and claims processes. Can I have the next slide, please? And these processes are being put in place for the new GTLD space so that once new GTLDs are launching, they will operate a sunrise and claims process. So the sunrise period is a 30-day period where rights holders have an early opportunity to register names before they're generally available. They can register the names based on the verified mark data that they have in the clearinghouse. The sunrise period is a requirement for all of the new GTLDs. Slide. And then the trademark claims period is a 90-day period where the when someone goes to register a domain name that matches something in the clearinghouse, there is a notice generated to that potential registrant giving the information on the matching marks, and the registrant has the option of whether to acknowledge that and proceed or not. So if they proceed, then a notice is generated to the rights holders that have matching marks in the clearinghouse. Next slide. So there's a topic that has come up a lot with relation to internationalized domain names in both of these processes, and that relates to how variant characters are treated. And variant characters, as most people probably know, exist in some scripts as characters that are considered to be equivalent or the same, so that if you have a rule saying that character A and character B are variants, you can generate domain labels out of those. You'd have label A and label B that would be considered to be variant labels of one another. And so early on when we were working on how to develop the clearinghouse and to build out these processes, we identified, along with many in the community who were also helping us think about and design this, a set of options for how this could work. The first approach that was considered was to be able to establish a common set of variant rules for each script. And then you could give that to the clearinghouse and say, apply these in all cases across all of the names and all of the TLDs. We will go through some of this a little bit later, but there is this is a fairly complex and difficult work when it comes to creating a standardized set of rules per script. And this has been work that many in the community have been working on for some time. So, in many ways, this would be the ideal option if you have an accepted, commonly established set of rules that can be referenced that the clearinghouse can apply consistently. However, we don't have that currently, and so we continue to look at other options. Another option that was discussed was to implement variant rules for each registry individually. So registries now have their own IDN tables. Registries that offer IDNs have their IDN tables, and then where relevant, they have rules to establish which characters are considered variant characters of one another. Not all registries use the same tables for the scripts. A lot of it is is dependent on the local language community or how the TLD is conceived and operated. And so the second approach that I have on the slide there has had to do with each time a registry was going to launch its sunrising claims processes, it would provide those its rules to the clearinghouse, and the clearinghouse would implement those particular rules for that registry's sunrising claims period. And that was considered not an optimal solution, since it would mean a lot of sort of customized work. Every time you have a different registry launching with different rules, there needs to be reprogramming and more work and testing and some inconsistency of results, and probably a higher cost for doing that work. So the final option that was the approach that we are working with currently is that the registries do continue to implement their variant rules at the registry level. So this is intended to give the most flexibility to each of the registries to continue the practices that they have and implement the IGN tables or policies that they've proposed in their applications. So how this would work in terms of a sunrise process, say you have a registry with an IDN table that has established character A and character B as variants of one another. Say you have label A in the as a mark in the clearinghouse, and according to the registry rules, label B would be a variant label of that. So if a rights holder comes with its SMD files showing, the mark's been verified by the clearinghouse, I'm eligible to register label A. And the registry has the ability to apply the rules that it would normally apply, which could be they would block the registration of label B, or it could be that they would include the registration of label B with the registration of label A, according to what the policy would be. When it comes to the claims period, take the same case where you have label A being the mark in the clearinghouse and label B as what would be considered by the registry to be a variant to that. So if you have a registrant coming and saying that they want to register label B, the registry policy would apply if it's blocked. That's not going to be registered. But if it does apply the variant rules, it's going to generate the variant as label A. So during the claims period, the registry needs to check the list of labels that are subject to trademark claims, so it can query both label A and label B to determine whether there is a match. And if there is a match, they can provide the indicator to the registrar that the claims notice needs to be shown to the registrant, and then the registrant could determine whether to proceed as happens in the claims process. Next slide. Finally, one of the questions that came up during the Beijing meeting, and that we've also been having some discussions about, relates to what I talked about in the sunrise period and how the variant rule could be applied there. So the intention is that the names during the sunrise period be tied to a mark that has been verified by the clearinghouse. We published a draft of rights protection mechanism requirements for registries before Beijing, and in that document, it stipulated that if a registry does want to apply variant rules, that it would it could do that, but it needed to be once the sunrise period had concluded. So that there are ongoing discussions concerning that draft with the community. We did receive a lot of feedback, and we're continuing to revise that. Certainly it's understood that the intention is to have the registries be able to apply the rules that they would normally apply. There's been some consideration of, for example, what a dispute resolution process might be in that instance if the registry is applying its own rules to what's considered a match of a trademark. So so those discussions are ongoing, but we're certainly mindful of the desire by the registries to be able to implement the implement their variant policies in the most efficient way possible. So I'm going to turn it over to Nyla Saras, who manages IBM projects at ICANN, and she's going to give you a little bit more background on some of the IBM work that's occurring in ICANN. Nyla?
Thank you, Karen. Good morning, everyone, or good morning, our time. Good day to everyone else. So I'm Nyla Saras. I manage the IBM effort here at ICANN. And given the focus of this webinar, we thought what we would do today is give you an update on the IBM work and the IBM variant PLD program specifically. And this is to talk a little bit about how some of the work that we're doing in IBM, the IBM variant program, is related to what's being discussed here. So to start off by variants, just to be clear here, what we're talking about is we're talking about two or more labels that are that may or may not look the same that are considered equivalent. And so this program is focused on handling these, how to identify these variants and how to handle them once identified. So the program, the IBM Variant TLD program, has been underway for a little over 2 years now, and its sole focus of that is, as I said, is the IBM TLD variants in the root zone. It started out by studying the issues around the identification, feasibility, and management of variant TLDs, and then it, which that effort in itself evolved into several projects. We're now in the fourth and final phase of the program. And we have several projects running at the same time. And so what I wanted to talk about today is a little bit of an idea about what the projects are, as well as expand a little bit more on one of the projects, which we call Project 2.2, because it has the most relevance to this topic here, and also it has a large community component that we need to spread the word about, because it involves community input. So the first project is what we call 2.2. I apologize because these numbers are not consecutive. There's a long history of why they are not. It goes back to how the projects were identified at the beginning of our work. We identified, I think, at least 8 projects, and then they got reshuffled, renumbered. So we stuck with the original numbers that we are, and that's why they're not consecutive. So we're not implementing them in a consecutive order. So this project 2.2 is called the IBM Root Label Generation Rules Procedure. This is the implementation of the procedure. As Karen mentioned at the earlier, there's a challenge here for creating a set of standardized rules for identifying equivalent characters in order to establish variant labels. So this procedure was developed in an earlier phase of the program. The procedure itself is a mechanism for how we would go about creating the set of rules that will identify variants. So now that the procedure is in place, this project is actually an implementation of the procedure. However, I must stress, and it's important to remember here, that these rules that we're developing to create standardized set of rules are focused on the root zone. And so what we're talking about here is creating a set of rules for identifying labels at the root zone level. The procedure itself, which I will keep referring to as the IBM Label Generation Rules Procedure, CIGIA itself involves both community panels and a panel of experts that will process the community inputs. So the communities will do the work, submit it to ICANN. A panel of experts will vet that work, and then it will get admitted into a set of rules that are unified. And I'll talk more about this in the next slide. The output of this process will the output of this process will identify variants and their status or disposition, I think is the term we use in the procedure. The status or disposition will identify which of these variants are allocatable and can move to delegation and which should be blocked. And again, we'll talk about this more in the next slide. The second project here listed on the slide is called Project 7. Project 7 is all about identifying all the documentation, processes, and systems that need to be updated in order to incorporate the label generation rules tool once it's developed. So once we get to a point where we will be able to identify what a variant is, we need to think about, well, all the processes that we need to update in order to delegate those variants. This applies both from the internal ICANN processes as well as from the perspective of the applicant, what they need to do in order to go through the process. So we're in the process of identifying those elements right now. The third project, therefore, Project 8, is a follow-on from Project 7. Once we've done the identification of what needs to change, Project 8 is actually the implementation of those changes. And finally, we have Project 1 that's a carryover from the last phase. This project is focused on creating a specification in which the IDN label generation rules will be represented. So in simple terms, the project is focused on creating the format for the quote-unquote IDN table, if you will, that the LGR will be represented in. This will be used both, the specification will be used both by the community to submit their work to ICANN and also for ICANN to represent that work and make it available in the form of the integrated root label generation rules. So that's those are the projects that we're talking about now that are underway. And if you will switch to the next slide, please. I'll give a little bit of a description of one of those projects that I think is consuming, is pretty much the bulk of the work that we are doing. And that's what I said about, what I talked about at the beginning, which is the label generation rules. So the procedure calls for is the establishment of generation panels. These are community-based generation panels, and then an integration panel. This is a two, and therefore is what we refer to as the two-pass process. Community work, the output of the community work will go into the integration panel. The procedure calls for the creation of work that that is called generation panels, and it involves having several expertise on the generation panels. For example, Unicode, DNS, IDNA, knowledge of the writing system itself, of course. And then there's a process that calls for they develop a proposal, they submit it to ICANN. To the ICANN integration panel. The integration panel will do some studying of the proposal. It may ask questions. Once a proposal is accepted, the community can start working on the label generation rules for their writing system. When that work is done, they submit it again to the integration panel. There may be some back and forth between the generation panel and the integration panel. Eventually, when the work from the integration panel is accepted, it gets admitted or added or merged into the unified label generation rules for the root zone. The diagram that you're looking at shows two generation panels. Of course, this is an N set of generation panels. There'll need to be a generation panel for each writing system. So just as an example, I imagine, and this is just as an example, I imagine there'll be a generation panel for the Arabic script, which represents several languages that use the Arabic script and used by several communities. And so that's why we're referring to them as the writing system community panels. And so we're currently right now in the process of recruiting for the integration panel. So there's a call out for subject matter experts to join the integration panel. I don't believe we have the link here, but I will make it available in the chat room if anyone is interested. So that's the extent of what we wanted to describe here in the actual procedure of what we're executing in the label generation rules. And if you'll go to the next slide. What we have wanted to add here is that we do have a webinar again next week dedicated to the topic of internationalized domain names and specifically more detailed updates about what we just discussed here, what projects are underway, what processes are currently open for the community to participate in, and we hope that you can join us. It will be next Thursday on 27 June at 4 p.m. At 2300 UTC. And we hope to see you there. And with that, I'll turn it back to Nicole.
Thank you all for attending the presentation portion of our webinar this morning. We'd like to open it up for questions now. Our operator will actually introduce individuals by first and last name, and we will go ahead and begin the question period. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. And if you are using a speakerphone, you will need to lift the handset before making your selection. Our first question comes from the line of Jeff Newman. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can, Jeff.
All right. Thanks. I have two questions, and I understand that the community is still talking about the requirements, so I'm not really going to address those. The first question is, I was kind of hoping to hear an update on the implementation of the trademark plus 50, where that is as far as implementation and verification from a clearinghouse, and when all that's going to be decided, because I think, you know, that may hinder some launches of Sunrises if we don't implement that pretty soon. And I think that's a well-established, decided area. So if you guys can provide an update on that. And then the second question really relates to the testing with the clearinghouse, with the registries and the registrars. I understand it's still a rule that the registry still has to sign an agreement in order to gain access to the testing environment. And I think if that stays the rule, that's not only going to delay the testing period until August or September, whenever these contracts are actually signed. But I don't think that is going to be the testing. I don't know how registrars can wait for that since registrars don't sign agreements, or at least registry agreements. And I don't know how that will work for back-end registry providers. So can you just give us an update on the testing, where it stands now, when the environment's going to be open, and who it's going to be open to? Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. This is Karen. So in regard to the first question on the implementation of the capability to add 50 additional labels based on UDRP or court decisions, that is something that we are working very closely with Deloitte on in terms of being able to publish updated guidelines for how those labels can be added and then what the verification steps are that Deloitte is doing, and then how those names get captured in the database. I think we're very close to being able to publish that information. So I would say by the end of the month at the latest, you can look for something on that. And then the question on testing with the clearinghouse. That is currently the the way that it's drawn out is the the parties have access to the test environment once the registry agreement is signed. I think that, really still under discussion because it's in everybody's interest to provide as much testing time as possible. And so I just say that we understand the concern and the request, and we're trying to see if we can accommodate that as much as we can. In terms of other dates, we are working day and night on the Sunrise and Claim systems. And we are at the point where we're, mindful that communications need to begin in terms of expected short-term dates and milestones. So that's wasn't the focus of this webinar, but there are future ones planned, as well as soon as we can actually publish and communicate dates that we're confident about, we'll do that.
So, I'm sorry, can you give us like a roundabout time period? I know that in the last webinar or two webinars ago, ICANN gave a timeline of when they expected the first Sunrise to be able to launch. So surely before they gave those dates, I would assume that they had figured in the testing period. So, is there any more indication? I'm not trying to lock you down to, a specific date like August 14th or something, but a roundabout period as to when testing could open. And then also I know that the lawyers have probably discussed this and thought, well, we can't really allow access to a testing environment without an agreement, but I would just venture to say that most companies deal with that with a beta agreement or some sort of temporary testing agreement, which is really short and to the point, which I would strongly advocate here to allow testing.
Yep, that's understood. And then in terms of the timeline, we are still working to the timelines that we published. I'm sorry that I really can't say any more than I've said, other than it's a serious matter, and we will publish some follow-up to this webinar, as we do typically.
Our next question comes from the line of Charles Gomez. Please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Chuck Gomes, and I have a question for Karen. Karen, on one of the slides there, I think the slide said that allocation of variants may occur after Sunrise, but I thought you said that it has to occur after Sunrise. And now it may be I didn't get it all correctly, but could you clarify that for me, please?
Sure. Thanks, Chuck. The way that the requirements are written currently, it is a requirement that the registry would allocate those names once the Sunrise period has concluded. So I think if it says May in the slide, it means that they have the option to. And then, as I mentioned, there's a discussion underway on whether we can implement it in a way that the registry can apply those rules during the Sunrise and not have to wait until the end.
Okay, so
does that help?
Well, let me come back. It's Chuck again. Is it a must or a may? Do variants have to be allocated after Sunrise? Understanding that variants cannot be allocated until all of the variant work is done, but I'm still not clear on what was said on the slide and what the actual requirement is.
So, if the registry has variant rules that they wish to apply, currently they must not do that until the Sunrise is concluded.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one at this time. And our next question comes from the line of Michael Fleming. Please go ahead.
Am I in? Hello?
Yes, Michael, we can hear you.
I apologize. Yes, first of all, I just want to thank you for the service you're providing Trademark Clearinghouse. I appreciate it so much. Actually, I wore the Trademark Clearinghouse polo shirt that was given out in Beijing. My question actually deals with the Whois information. And I've asked this question before. However, the response I got wasn't necessarily satisfactory, so I'm going to ask it and rephrase it again. Basically, I want to know how the Whois data will be matched with TMCH. And what I mean by that is that we will apply for a domain in ASCII. However, how would that registrant information be matched with a Japanese language-based registrant in Trademark Clearinghouse? So if we apply for a trademark in Trademark Clearinghouse in Japanese and the registrant data is also verified in Japanese, how will that data for the Whois be verified when it's being verified in ASCII?
Thanks, Michael. I'll try to answer that if I understand your question correctly. So, first of all, when it comes to the registry processing the domain name registration and populating the Whois record for that, the FindMark data file that's issued by the clearinghouse is going to be presented by the rights holder to the registry. So that on its own is sufficient for the registry to be able to process that registration if it matches the domain name labels that are in there. So there's not a requirement that the registry go in and establish matching between the information in the clearinghouse record and the Whois record for the domain name. But that is something that registries may wish to do as an additional, verification or best practice. So it's not required that they establish that match, but they do have the option to do that.
No, it's ultimately up to the registry then.
Correct.
All right. Thank you very much. That answers my question.
As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you have any additional questions, please press star one at this time. And if you are using a speakerphone, you will need to lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please. And our next question comes from the line of Alan Greenberg. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Question was regarding the trademark plus 50 rule. My understanding is that the Trademark Clearinghouse will allow 50 additional entries in the clearinghouse for each trademark entry in the clearinghouse, which implies that if a mark is registered in multiple jurisdictions, N jurisdictions, then effectively there are N times 50 additional entries allowed. Is that correct?
Thank you, Alan. This is Karen Lunch talking again. So with the capacity to add 50 labels, if there are that many, that many different records, then yes, there could be 50 in a number of across a number of records, because each a mark registered in one jurisdiction is a different mark record than the mark registered in a different jurisdiction. And so if there are, there have been findings regarding that many domain names by a UDRP provider or a court decision, then those can be associated.
Thank you.
And I'm showing no further questions in the audio queue. Please continue.
So at this time, we'd like to take it over to the Adobe questions and comments. So we'll have Antonietta Mangiacati introducing the questions, and our speakers will give answers. Thank you, Antonietta.
Hi, everyone. The first question comes from Ching Chao.
Where in the Trademark Clearinghouse Guideline are the simplified and traditional trademark rules indicated, i.e., separate trademark records for separate scripts?
Yes, this is Vicky. So it's correct that this is currently not in the in-house guidelines. However, we will shortly publish a memo on this as also examples of the mixed scripts information that we just provided on the webinar, so that it will be clearly communicated on our website and can be used for by all users of the clearinghouse as well.
The second question comes from James Mitchell. Will the aforementioned simplified traditional trademarks appear in one SMD with two marks, one simplified, one traditional, one SMD with one mark having two labels, or two SMD files?
Okay, so this is Vicky again. So in principle, the way it has been set up is that one SMD file per trademark record, so per name of the mark, that can include multiple labels. So in the case that it provided on the simplified and traditional, that actually means that there will be two trademark records, two SMD files with two separate labels. It's not possible to add this as a to include it in one SMD file.
The next question comes from Tommy Ho. This question is for Vicky. What are the unique qualifications of those clearinghouse staff that verify trademark records? That is, do they have a legal trademark background, or are they supervised by trademark attorneys? And also, other than dots, what other special characters are not accepted in mark names?
Okay, thank you. So who's doing the verification on trademark records? It is a Deloitte. It's a mix of trademark attorneys, people with a legal background, and people with extensive audit knowledge as well. So we have a mix of everything. It's important to note that the trademark records coming from different countries are also processed in different countries. So it's not that everything is coming to the team here in Belgium. So depending on the jurisdiction of the trademark, it goes to the different groups of Deloitte around the world. So that's already the answer to the first question. And as for the second question, so other special characters are accepted. It is only the dot that is not accepted due to the fact that I can originally had stated that trademarks that included an ATLD extension were not accepted. And then as we do not know, I mean, what today is a trademark, I mean, for example, trademark that has .green and tomorrow that's a new extension, then we have a trademark with an extension. So in order to also create a fair rule, that is why that has been implemented as no trademarks with a dot or contains a dot or ends with a dot are accepted in the clearinghouse. And we also know that some people are putting their name of the mark without the dots, but if you look on the certificate, it's clearly indicated that there's a dot in the name of the mark. So again, that's not accepted. Hope that answers those questions.
The next question comes from Amy Graham. How quickly will this presentation be posted to the website?
Hi, Amy. This is Nicole Davenport. I will go ahead and as soon as we finish with the webinar today, I will make sure that the presentation gets published as quickly as possible. I can guarantee that it will be up by close of business Pacific time today, and I will do my best to get it up even quicker than that.
The next question comes from Ching Chao. During the verification process, if there's clarification, modification needed, does the question always go back to Deloitte in Belgium, or can we work with, say, Deloitte local team in Beijing or Tokyo?
So again, this is Vicky again. This, as I said, the verification does not go through Deloitte Belgium. Not all of them. But if there are questions about the verification, we do have the customer support in place, and we do also manage that with our local teams. But if there are questions about the verification process, we need to be able to track it and to monitor and discuss with our local expertise as well. So it's not possible, if you have questions about the verification process, as to call somebody and ask how is this happening here in these jurisdictions. But again, the trademarks are verified by our global company, and for customer support purposes, it is, just need to submit a ticket through our service incident request. And if you have questions about the validations, and it is also provided to our network within our Deloitte community.
The next question comes from Tommy Ho. Are in China and Venezuela also exceptions to the needs classification?
Hi, I'm Tommy. And so China and Venezuela are part of the needs classification. At least currently they are. There might be some miscommunication, because I do believe that it's quite recent that they joined the needs classification, but they are members of the NIST classification and are currently using the NIST classification numbers for the goods and services.
The next question comes from Elaine Pruis. On which date will the SMD verification system be operational and available for testing? On which date will the system be ready for live verification?
Hi, Elaine. Thanks for the question. So I think that's been addressed as much as possible in here. The Sunrise and the SMD capabilities are prioritized first, and then we have the claims functionality also proceeding. So as noted earlier, that's I know it's a concern, and we'll post some more dates when we can. Thanks.
The next question also comes from Elaine Proof. How many ASCII entries as of today?
So this is Vicky here. Currently, Elaine, we have about 4,000 entries today.
The next question comes from Volker Grayman. Can you give us some feedback on how the trademark Fit Plus 50 proposal is currently expected to be implemented?
Yes, hello, Volker. We've had a few questions about that, and I've gotten some comments that I may need to clarify what we're talking about. So we do have the clearinghouse operational currently for people being able to submit their trademark data and have it verified, and so we do have some existing clearinghouse records. There is a proposal that has stated an intention to implement, which allows a rights holder who has already had their trademark verified to associate some additional domain name labels to that record. And those labels would be based on a finding that they were previously registered abusively based on that same trademark. And so already the for each trademark record there are a set of matching labels that are associated with that. There may be one, or there may be one exact match, or there may be many depending on what characters are in the trademark, and how those matching rules, how many matches they generate. And so what we're talking about would be the capacity to add a limited number, up to 50, of names, of additional labels to that record. They would be added for the purpose of the trademark claims service only. So they would be considered matches for the purpose of providing notice to potential registrants and generating notices back to the trademark holders when those names get registered. Speaking at a high level, the current expectation is that once there's an existing trademark record, the user will have the ability to go in, enter the additional labels, cite the proceeding case number, provider, documentation that can be verified to establish that yes, that mark was related to a case or a decision relating to those particular domain name labels having been registered. The clearinghouse would then perform the function of verifying that data and then capturing those labels in the database for the purposes of the claims service and not the Sunrise. And then the claims notice from what we have in the guidebook would be modified slightly to provide an indication that some of the information in there is based on one of these cases or findings, and that providing that information to the registrants also. I hope that helps.
Pardon me, we do have an audio question from the line of Hansi. Please go ahead. And pardon me, Hansi, your line is open. Please check your mute button. Pardon me, your line is open, Hansi. Please check your mute button. It looks like Hansi has stepped away from their desk. Please continue.
The next question comes from David. On the second level, what is the procedure where there is a trademark registered with the Trademark Clearinghouse, but that is a generic word, for example, a known in Cyrillic, absolute in English?
Thank you, David, for the question. If I don't answer, then I hope you'll provide some additional clarification here. So when the trademark is submitted to the clearinghouse for verification, it is verified according to the existence of that trademark within the jurisdiction that issued it. So trademark practices vary according to the jurisdictions. I don't believe there's a common approach to what would be considered a generic word or how those rules would be applied across all of the jurisdictions. So what the Trademark Clearinghouse does is verify what has been issued in the jurisdiction. They don't have a role in assessing the or interpreting the rights that were issued according to any other standard. It just records the existence of those rights as they've been issued. Thanks.
The next question comes from Rubens Cole. Could you confirm that in the case of Latin scripts with a diacritic mark, it is not possible to protect both versions with two separate records? For example, ICANN Cafe and ICANN Cafe with an extensive E.
Thanks, Antonietta. Can you read that question again, please?
Yes. Could you confirm that in the case of Latin scripts with a diacritic mark, it is not possible to protect both versions with two separate records? For example, ICANN Cafe and ICANN Cafe with an extensive E at the end.
Hi, Ruben. So it is possible to protect both if both are protected according to the documentation that's submitted. In the case of something like Cafe and Cafe, you could have, as a trademark holder, you could have a trademark in both of those, or you could have a trademark in one of them. the trademark is going to be recorded in the clearinghouse as it exists in the jurisdictions. And so there may be cases where a registry is going to apply a matching rule with the diacritic characters in it. And that's what we've described in terms of how the variants could be implemented at the registry level.
The next is a comment from Craig. It would be incredibly helpful if I can publish the webinar decks before the webinar so participants know what will be presented and can prepare questions accordingly. Thanks very much.
Hi, Craig. Thanks for the comment. That's excellent. We'll do that.
And the next question comes from Rubens Cole. This question is for Karen Lentz. With variants and trademark clearinghouse claims, does the registry require both original and variant, or must check original and not possible variants?
Hi, Rubens. So the registry during the claims period is required to check all of the, you know, before they register any name during the claims period, they're required to check whether that name is subject to a claim. So depending on what the registry's policy is, if, say, there's a label that would generate several variants, they may choose to check all of those so that the registrant could get a useful form of notice. The registry may not have have a policy like that, or they may have more of a blocking policy, so it would really depend on the individual registry practices.
And pardon me, we do have a couple of audio questions at this time. Would you like to take them?
Yes, we will. We'll continue for a few more minutes. I know that we started late. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. And if you have to leave, I know we're over time, but we will post all of the webinar materials and the follow-up questions and answers to the ones that we haven't gotten to. But we will continue for about 5 more minutes just so we can handle as many questions as we can. Thanks.
Our next audio question comes from the line of Tom Barrett. Please go ahead.
Hi, Karen. I just have a general question about the timing for ICANN in terms of when it would start considering additional validators such as Deloitte to the Trademark Clearinghouse.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for the question. So as background, we are starting up the clearinghouse as a new service. There are a couple of functions that the clearinghouse provides, and we have agreements with various parties to perform the different functions. So we have Deloitte, who is performing the verification function, and we have IBM, who's managing the database. We are, as you mentioned, Tom, we do have capacity, and one of the reasons it is designed that way is so that there is potential in the future to open up to additional validators that might serve a different need or be able to provide some parallel services. So so that is contemplated. It's you know, the priority right now is to get the service up and running and make sure that it's you know, operating in a stable manner, that it is supporting the TLD launches well. And I think that once we have that under our belt, then we'll be able to proceed with bringing in some additional validators, perhaps. Thanks.
Our next question comes on the line of Han V. Please go ahead.
Hi, hello. Well, I'm not sure if it's me. It is. My question is a simple one. I'm sorry.
We have an echo on the line. We're having difficulty hearing you. Could you perhaps mute speakers or check whether that might be an issue? Thanks.
Okay, I typed in my question in IM. This is okay? Right. Can I type in the question?
No, we can hear you.
Are you going to hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, okay. It's a registry. I want to allocate a trademark varying characters after sunrise period. It cannot really rely on the current TMCH services. It says it needs to do verification and authentication regarding this variant character by itself. Does it majorly increase the burden of the new GPLD registry? Thank you.
Thank you, Hong. So if I understand your question, I'm just going to repeat it, and you can tell me if this is the right question. So I think that you asked about the sunrise period and the requirement there where the registry can apply the variant rules once the sunrise has ended. Is that your question?
Yeah, correct me.
Okay, thank you, Hong. Yes, the way that the original requirements were drafted, that was a requirement. So the registry could indeed apply its variant matching according to its IDN tables in the registry. But in the case of the sunrise, it would do the allocation of those names once the sunrise has concluded. And as I mentioned earlier, we did receive a lot of feedback on that document, so we are looking at some of the requests that the registry should be able to apply those matches during the sunrise period based on applying its IDN tables. So that's under consideration.
Our next question comes on the line of Jim Pendergrass. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Karen. Thanks for taking the question. Wondering, is there any sort of third-party audit of the database to ensure, you know, outside of Deloitte, to ensure the accuracy and quality of the trademarks that are being registered?
Hi, Jim. I'll ask Vicki to add to, if she has anything to add to my comment, but that's essentially accomplished through a couple of things. One is the Deloitte verification process, which features two different sets of validators who are looking at something and agreeing on the result on the accuracy of that data. Secondly, there's also a what you might call a dispute process or a mechanism for people to bring to the attention of the clearinghouse something that they believe is inaccurate. So that can either be a challenge where a record wasn't accepted, or it can be a challenge to, you know, the clearinghouse accepted something and it shouldn't have, or the clearinghouse, you know, found this eligible for sunrise and it shouldn't have, or, you know, the information is out of date or has changed. You know, this trademark no longer belongs to X party, or this trademark has expired, or that type of thing. So both of those mechanisms exist.
Yeah, and if I can just add, Karen, so we when we do the verification, even if it's on online databases that we check, we do add each item that we verify to the file as well. So there's always a clean track or trace from at the moment that we verified what information that we looked at as well. So if there is a dispute, it can also be provided to that party that is disputing to actually ascertain the fact that we did the correct job at the moment that it was done.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'm showing no further audio questions at this time. Please continue.
The next question comes from Carp. We have a question about trademark certificate. One of our trademarks was declined because of no address was provided on the trademark certificate. But the certificate in our country has no space for address to be provided, which means no trademark certificate can be used from our country. We think that this is unfair to our trademark. What can we do if the address is not, if the address is not on the certificate? At least we should have one more chance to fix it.
Okay, sorry about that. So these are items that we prefer to, that it's related to the customer or refer to the customer support, because we need to definitely first check that that everything else was correct. But in case that the trademark certificate does not provide an address, we actually ask you to provide a copy of the company registration form where we can find establish the address on the establish the address of the trademark holder. And you'll also see on our website, we publish the online databases where we, in cases, the trademark certificate does not provide the addresses, and there we actually mention to provide a copy of the registration form or a copy of something that provides the establishment or address of the trademark holder in those cases, so that we can indeed refer to a correct trademark holder that has an address in the country, of course, where in the country that corresponds where the trademark holder is located. But again, for this, I would advise to create a ticket about that edit to make sure that this is indeed what happened, and we'll definitely assist you to look into this and take a decision on what the next steps are in these cases.
The next question is whether China's Organizational Name Administration Center gets ICANN's accreditation to provide Trademark Clearinghouse Registration Service in China. I receive a newsletter which states they are authorized to be a Trademark Clearinghouse state. They are authorized to be a Trademark Clearinghouse Service provider in China.
So this is Karen Lentz. I don't know what the specific circumstances are here, but I'll clarify that with regard to the verification service for the clearinghouse, that Deloitte is engaged in performing that service. They do accept trademark submissions from either individual users, rights holders that want to be putting their data in individually, or also from agents. So that could be a company or an organization that handles the clearinghouse transactions on behalf of customers. And so there are a number of agents. There's a process with Deloitte to become a clearinghouse agent. And so there are a number of parties that are providing services in that area.
Hello, everyone. At this time, we are going to go ahead and close the webinar. Thank you so much for attending. We will have not only the presentation and the Adobe recordings, as well as the teleconference audio recording. We'll also provide you with an additional question and answer document. As soon as possible, these items will be published on the website. So once again, thank you for attending, and we look forward to having you at the next webinar on the 27th. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.